When news broke that the U.S. Army Sergeant Bo Bergdahl had been released to the United States after years in captivity, it was hailed as good news. But then, more information surfaced and tough questions were raised, like why the United States released five Taliban commanders from Guantanamo in exchange for Bergdahl, and why Congress wasn't given 30 days' notice before the deal was executed. Hillary Clinton told NPR she sought a tougher deal, but also doesn't want to criticize the administration.
I'm not going to second-guess the decision that was made. And as I understand it, it was a decision backed by the State Department, the Defense Department, and the intelligence community.
Meanwhile, Speaker of the House John Boehner issued this warning.
We're going to pay for this. There is not any doubt in my mind. There are going to be lost lives associated with what came out of this.
On this week's Big Question, we ask, was the swap the right thing for the United States to do? You can weigh in on the Big Question at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or email us at talk@WPR.org. We also have an online poll set up for you to vote in at WPR.org/joy. Let me welcome our guest today. Douglas Castle is a Notre Dame Presidential Fellow and a professor of law at the University of Notre Dame. He has filed briefs in the U.S. Supreme Court on behalf of the rights of prisoners at Guantanamo Bay. And his opinion piece, called Was the Deal to Free Bo Bergdahl Justified?, recently appeared at CNN.com. Douglas, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Dale Herspring is a distinguished professor of political science at Kansas State University and a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. He served in the U.S. Department's Foreign Service and U.S. Navy. His piece, called Obama Reminiscent of Nixon, will be published this weekend. Dale, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
Douglas Castle, let's start with you first. In your opinion, in your opening statement here, why was the deal ultimately the right one to make?
Well, based on what is now known in the public record, and there's a lot that we don't know and won't know until hearings are held and information eventually is declassified. But based on what we now know, I think this was the right deal done in the wrong way. It was the right deal because this was an American, in effect, a prisoner of war in Afghanistan, although he was probably physically in Pakistan. And at a time when the war is winding down, when American troops in the war are winding down, we'll only have 10,000 by the end of the year and are scheduled to have none within a couple of years. So the chances of getting Mr. Bergdahl back in the future would appear to be diminishing. And it is traditional and it's the right thing to do to bring Americans home at the end of the war when they're held in captivity. So I applaud the President, the State Department, the Pentagon, and the CIA for all being in agreement on this deal. At least that's what we're told. I think it was the right thing to do. Now, of course, it was terribly mishandled in the way that the administration failed to give advance notice to Congress and some of the unfortunate statements that were made, for example, by Susan Rice qualifying Mr. Bergdahl as a person who had served his country with honor and distinction. That was way overboard. It was irrelevant to the point of bringing Mr. Bergdahl back. But the basic idea of not letting Americans stay in indefinite captivity in the hands of the Taliban was the principal reason why this was a good thing to do to bring him back. Now, whether he gets court-martialed when he comes home, whether he gets administratively discharged, or something else, that's a separate matter, but it's right to bring him home.
Mm-hmm. Dale Herspring, you see this as another example, though, of Obama's incompetency. Tell us in your opening statement why this was a bad deal.
Well, first of all, let me say I agree to bring Americans home. I had 33 years in the Navy, starting from a seaman recruit and finishing as a captain in the Navy. So, I mean, I'm fully aware of the world of the military and how the military thinks. first of all, the president has told us several times that we have a war on terror. Well, the war on terror is not ending. We have a conflict in Afghanistan that may be coming down, may not be given what's happening in Iraq. But I think it was a very poor deal. Five senior officers, four-star generals, as somebody wouldn't call them, giving up for a person who is of questionable background, given what he's done at the best. This is just basically part of Obama's game to try and empty the prison, which if you favor that, then what he did was fine. It's also part of Obama's game that says, I'm not going to deal with Congress. I'm just going to do what I want to do by executive fiat, reminding one of Boris Yeltsin. That's the way he ran planes for 8 years, was just basically by fiat. And so, I mean, I don't see that this has done anything other than it's told the world that we will negotiate with terrorists. That's the message. It's very clear. And God pity us, or some foreign service officer, some military personnel is going to get seized somewhere else. The Taliban now says, oh, hey, this is work. Let's go out and find somebody else to seize. So, I mean, I'm glad he's home. I'm glad for his sake and his family's sake. We'll let the court marshals decide what to do with him when he get, in time. But I see this as just setting a horrendous precedent.
And, Dale, what would have been a more fair deal in your mind?
Well, somebody, maybe one of those people, somebody down at his level. I don't see reparating in a way that was done with five very senior people as anywhere near fair. If there were people down at his level, fine, go ahead and we've done that before. That's the way wars have to do that all the time. But this was such a lopsided one, and it was clearly so clearly aimed by Obama. You guys won't let me close a Gitmo. By a Lord, I'll get you. I'll close it, whether you like it or not.
Douglas, what about that? Is this just a means of closing Gitmo bit by bit?
No, it certainly isn't. There are two points in what Professor Hirschspring just said. One has to do with terrorism, and the other has to do with precedent. Let me deal with the terrorism point first. There's no country that has more experience with terrorism than Israel. And yet, on a number of occasions in the past, when Israel has wanted to get back an Israeli who was held captive by Palestinian extremist groups, Israel has traded not five people for one Israeli, but in some cases hundreds, and in one case more than 1,000, in order to get back an Israeli citizen and bring him home. So the numbers game is not, it seems to me, a good argument. The second reason why it's not a good argument is, of course, everyone would agree in the United States of America with Professor Hirschspring that it would be fairer to trade one person for one, or to trade one low-ranking guy for one American sergeant. The problem is we don't get to make that deal. It takes two to tango, and unless you can get the Taliban to agree to it, they're not going to do it. So the question is, if the Taliban says it's either five for one or it's nothing, what do you do? It's not an ideal choice, but you have to make a call. The administration made a call. The State Department, the Pentagon, and the intelligence community were all behind it. I think it was the right thing to do. Now, with regard to the precedent and the worry about negotiating with terrorists, the United States has long had a general policy of not negotiating with terrorists, and we should maintain that policy. But this is a different situation. The Taliban were the de facto government of Afghanistan when we invaded and overthrew them. They were actually recognized by less than a handful of countries, but some countries actually recognized them as the legal government of Afghanistan. There's no question that under international humanitarian law over the last almost 15 years since we originally invaded, 13 years, they are an armed combatant force with whom we have been engaged in a traditional war by any definition. This is not the much broader, vaguer war on terrorism against anybody who wants to commit a violent act against Americans anywhere in the world. This is a traditional, recognizable war against an armed force that was previously the government of the country before we invaded and overthrew them. So at the end of a war, you can get your prisoners back, have an exchange of prisoners, which is what we're doing right now. The war in Afghanistan is not over. It's going to keep going, but it's a separate armed conflict from the much broader war on terrorism. And if any terrorist group were to suggest to the United States that this is a precedent for negotiating with them, the answer should be no. We're not negotiating with terrorists. We did negotiate with an armed force that was previously a government. So just as a matter of precedent, this is not one that is going to lead us or should lead us to negotiate with terrorists in the future.
We'll get Dale Hirschspring's response after the break. I'm Cynthia Schuster filling in for Joy Cardine. This is the big question on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're wondering if the U.S. prisoner swap was a good thing for the U.S. To do. We have a poll online at WPR.org/joy that you can vote in, or you can also call in with your thoughts and your questions at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can leave a comment on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Cynthia Schuster in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Cynthia Schuster in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's the big question. We're talking about whether the exchange of five Taliban prisoners for U.S. Army Sergeant Bo Bergdahl was the right thing for the United States to do. We're inviting your questions and comments at 1-800-642-1234. You can also email talk@WPR.org or vote in our online poll at WPR.org/joy. My guests are Douglas Castle, a Notre Dame Presidential Fellow and a professor of law at the University of Notre Dame. He's filed briefs in the U.S. Supreme Court on behalf of the rights of prisoners at Guantanamo Bay. And Dale Herspring is a distinguished professor of political science at Kansas State University and a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. He served in the U.S. State Department's Foreign Service and the U.S. Navy. Dale, let me ask you this. What does this exchange mean for America's security, especially overseas?
Well, my colleague and I are going to have to disagree because I think if I was going back overseas as an FSO, I'd be a little bit uptight right now because it tells not only the Taliban, but tells the whole world that under certain circumstances, the United States will, in fact, negotiate. I mean, the problem we've had with Obama, he has made so damn many threats. He's never followed up on a single one of them. It's a constant game. If you do this, I'll get really mad and stomp my feet. And the word is out. I mean, I've spent most of my life working on Russia. Putin thinks Obama is a joke. I have contacts directly into the Kremlin on occasions, and people tell me that nobody respects Obama. And that's because he sits there and he has no credibility, which is a hardened key. Key of foreign policy. If you don't have credibility, you have nothing. And this whole game that he keeps playing, and this is part of an effort to try and close a Gitmo. I mean, Congress won't let him do it. Even Clapper came out. This argument that all of the branches of government agreed is just simply nonsense. If you know people in the system, the military is absolutely livid. When I'm right near Fort Riley, I can't tell you what morale is like out there after this whole thing. The numbers game, that's another silly argument. The Israelis don't give back five very top leaders. They give back foot soldiers, spear carriers. So, I mean, that's just not – this is just – the whole thing is setting – just further proof that Obama has simply – the well is empty.
Douglas, what about that? Does President Obama lack credibility abroad, and how does the situation affect that?
Well, I certainly agree with Professor Herspring that President Obama in the past couple of years has done some things that undermine his credibility. The one that leaps to my mind was the statement that there was a red line that should not be crossed in Syria if chemical weapons were used, and then he did not follow up on that and was sort of rescued by a deal to get rid of the chemical weapons, but there were no adverse consequences for President al-Assad in Syria. So I certainly agree that there have been a number of instances where the president's undermined his own credibility. But if our concern in this instance is credibility in the world, I'm less concerned about our credibility with Mr. Putin, whose own credibility is, to put it mildly, highly suspect. I'm concerned about our credibility with the well-meaning people and governments of the democracies of the world. And Americans don't realize this unless they travel abroad and speak to people who are concerned about international affairs. But Guantanamo continues to be a tremendous international embarrassment for the United States. There is not one country in the world that doesn't, one democracy anyway in the world, that doesn't recognize that the idea that because you think people are bad guys and you can't put them on trial because you've tortured them, that you can just hold them forever in a prison like Guantanamo, the idea that that doesn't violate international law and basic principles of human rights is an idea that sells well only in the United States Congress and among some Americans. It is constantly thrown in our face every time we criticize human rights violations by Vladimir Putin, by China, by Syria, by anybody else. They say we are hypocrites because we continue to flagrantly violate international human rights law by keeping all these people at Guantanamo and not putting them on trial. So our credibility in the world would be tremendously enhanced if we were to close Guantanamo and either put these prisoners on trial or send them somewhere else. But that's politically impossible. It's not going to happen. But the reason it's not happening is more one of domestic politics than of national security.
Let me bring a caller in here. We've got Kyle in Waukesha. Hi, Kyle.
Hello. Yeah. First, I want to say that I respect both of your guests. And I'm really glad the gentleman is home from Afghanistan. I'm a fourth-generation veteran. I've had several family members make four or five tours in Afghanistan, and it's a really bad situation. But I'm forced into agreement with the gentleman from K-State. The people there have a completely different point of view of life than we do. And what we've told them now is that there's a currency on the market, and I really am concerned about our military guys and gals as we're trying to bring them home and we draw it down, so it's harder for them to protect themselves. And I'd like to hear from both guests, how are we going to protect our guys, and what are we going to do, and gals, sorry, if we do start seeing more of this happening, which is a behavior that these people have done before.
Thanks, Kyle. Let's start with you, Dale. How are we going to protect the men and women abroad now that, as Kyle believes, there's a currency on the table?
With great difficulty, because this is we go around the world trying to promote democracy, and the fact is our sense of democracy is very different than a lot of much of the rest of the world. And as far as whether the people, the rest of the world likes us or not, quite honestly, having been a diplomat and having seen things at very high levels, I don't really give a damn whether they like us or not. I want them to respect us. And the point is that this love and kindness is just simply not the way the world works. Henry Kissinger once said that foreign policy without backed up with the use or threat of military force is no foreign policy. He was absolutely right. and law and human rights, if we can do those without damaging our vital interests, fine. This damages our vital interests because this exposes all kinds of people. I wore the uniform. I know what the hell they're going through. And Fred, let me also say I put tremendous respect on the young man, for him and his family, for all the tours of duty he's done on our behalf. But I just don't see this as a major issue, except that it puts all of us. I mean, why not go grab an FSO? That's an American government official, and they're out and about. What about all the aid people are running around Afghanistan now, out in the boondocks? I mean, this whole thing is, to me, just sort of insincerely suggested. Well, as Kerry did. Oh well, it's all baloney. It ain't baloney.
And Douglas, what's your response to Kyle's question?
Well, first, let me thank Kyle and his family for their service to the country, as Professor Hirschspring did. And let me answer his question first and then go to Professor Hirschspring's comment. How are we going to protect our soldiers as we withdraw from Afghanistan? Critical question. But it's a critical question that would be there whether or not this deal had been done. Because obviously the Taliban are declared enemies of the United States. They've been trying to kill Americans whenever they could over there. If they had a chance to capture Americans, they would do that as well, independently of whether this deal had gone down or not. So it's a very dangerous situation as we withdraw our troops over there. And my only answer, since I'm not an Army field command expert, would be to say that obviously the Pentagon is aware of the risks to our troops in a withdrawal and a hostile combat situation, and we can only hope that they will take every reasonable measure to protect our troops as they pull them out. Now, turning to Professor Hirschspring's comments, couple of points. First of all, the issue is not whether the rest of the world likes us as opposed to his preference that they respect us. This is not a matter of like. This is a matter of respect. It's a matter of respect for our claimed policies to support democracy and human rights around the world, and then we turn around and violate every principle of international law and human rights in the detentions at Guantanamo. It undermines what political scientists and international relations experts refer to as American soft power, our ability to achieve our objectives in the world by persuading all of the competing factions, ideological factions in the world, that our way is a good way, a right way, a way that works, a way that improves the welfare of people. Professor Hirschbring referred to Henry Kissinger's quote that a foreign policy not backed by force is no foreign policy. Henry Kissinger said that decades ago at a time when the United States had the military force required to accomplish its objectives in the world. We no longer have that military force for two reasons. Let's get to those reasons
after the news. I actually have to jump in here. We're talking with Douglas Castle of Notre Dame University and Dale Hirschbring, a distinguished professor of political science at Kansas State University. It's the big question. Was the U.S. prisoner swap a good thing for the U.S. to do? You can call in at 800-642-1234 or vote online at WPR.org/joy. I'm Cynthia Schuster, in for Joy Cardina on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Was the exchange of the U.S. Army Sergeant Bo Bergdahl good or bad for national security? And was it a good thing for the United States to do? That's our big question today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Cynthia Schuster, in for Joy Cardine. We're taking your calls at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@WPR.org, and you can vote in our online poll for the big question, available at WPR.org/joy. My guests this hour are Douglas Castle. He's Notre Dame Presidential Fellow and a professor of law at the University of Notre Dame. He's filed briefs in the U.S. Supreme Court on behalf of the rights of prisoners at Guantanamo Bay. And his opinion piece called Was the Deal to Free Bo Bergdahl Justified? Recently appeared at CNN.com. Plus, Dale Hirschbring is with us. He's a distinguished professor of political science at Kansas State University and a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. He served in the U.S. State Department's Foreign Service and the U.S. Navy. And his piece, called Obama Reminiscent of Nixon, will be published this weekend. Douglas, just before the news, you were going to, in response to Dale, you were offering two reasons why Henry Kissinger's foreign policy no longer applies today. And I'll let you get through those two things real briefly, and then we'll get to a caller.
Thank you very much. Essentially, the point is we're in the 21st century, not the 20th century. The United States no longer has the economic base to support the sort of disproportionate military power that we had in the world back when Henry Kissinger was Secretary of State, or even in later decades of the 20th century. And secondly, the power of China is rising and Russia is getting back on its feet. So in the 21st century, we cannot expect to use hard power to achieve our objectives in every situation. Syria is just one example of a situation where we do not have the hard power to get the job done, and the American people would not be willing even to let any president try to use that hard power. So our soft power matters more than ever, and that's why the opinion of other democracies around the world that the United States is a principled country that has principles and values and stands by them is important to our ability to live in a peaceful and prosperous world.
All right, let's take a call from Ann in Madison. Hi, Ann.
Hi. Well, I don't believe in this war anyway, but and this was a very sensitive and rather observant young man who saw through its hypocrisies, and there should be a way for the Army to release men like this before they, you know, before they get into a situation where they walk away. He just wasn't, you know, war material, and that should have been obvious when he was in, you know, when he first enlisted. But I called basically because the people, the men who are have been in Guantanamo Bay, many of them tortured, with no hope of release for so many years, have a right to be released immediately if they've been cleared. And the hopeless situation in Guantanamo Bay is something that President Obama said he would do something about when he was first elected. So I think that the contrast to them between the release at the insistence of the Taliban of these four men who are known to have been bad guys, and the continued, you know, incarceration of men who've been cleared for release several years ago has to be extremely difficult for the men who've been cleared for release, but whom the blowhards in Congress won't allow to be released.
Thanks, Ann. Dale Hirschspring, what's your response to that?
First of all, I'm not certain about if they've been cleared or not cleared. That's simply something beyond my pay grade. I don't know what the situation is for that. If a person's a terrorist can go back and do the same thing they did before. Some of them have been released. 30% are back in the field. We actually think it's probably more than that. It's the only ones we can absolutely verify. I think it's nice to be concerned about these poor people. I mean, they took up arms. They went out to kill Americans, pay the price. And I frankly wouldn't be in any hurry to release him.
And Douglas, what are your thoughts on that? Is this a matter of choosing the right people to be released from Guantanamo, or was the right thing done?
Well, I think we have to remember there's a distinction that is often missed in American public discussions of these issues between the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda has been trying to attack us for years, including well before 9/11. That's one thing. But Taliban did not attack the United States before 9/11. They didn't attack the United States in 9/11, and they didn't attack the United States ever at all until we invaded their country and attacked them. They were defending themselves against our attack. Now, our attack, in my judgment, and I said this at the time, was justified because they were providing a safe haven for Al-Qaeda. But we have to remember that these Taliban leaders never took up arms against the United States until we took up arms against them and invaded their country and started capturing them. So the notion that they somehow forfeited their rights by defending themselves against an American invasion is one that I think has it exactly backwards. These are not Al-Qaeda people who are being released. They're Taliban people who are being released.
One reason given for the exchange was allegedly Bergdahl's deteriorating medical condition. Would this be enough of an extenuating circumstance to merit an exchange in your mind, Dale Hirschspring?
Not for the five top people, number one. Number two, that came from 6 months ago or 3 months ago, depending on when you talk to. Third of all, looking at what the doctors have said, he's in good physical health. Number two, he looked very good when the Taliban propaganda things they shot when him getting out and walking onto the airplane. I'm not a physician, so I can't make the statement as to what he is, and certainly not a psychologist either. But from all the stuff that we have available at this point, it does not look like you had to get him out of there because he was three quarters dead.
And Douglas had mentioned at the top of the show that the chances of getting Bergdahl back seem to be diminishing. In addition to that, we're scaling back our efforts in Afghanistan to just 10,000 troops by the end of this year, and a complete withdrawal by the end of 2016 is what's hoped for on the administration's part. If this deal hadn't been made, what would you say the chances would have been of getting Bergdahl back?
I have absolutely no idea. I mean, this is a talking point used by the administration all the time, and I simply don't know. You would have to have been part of the discussion behind closed doors for the last 3 or 4 years to be able to make an argument one way or the other on that one, and I simply was not part of it, so I don't know. They sort of make that as a key talking point that, oh, if we didn't get him now, would have never been a chance to get him, and other people look out and say that's absurd. I don't know which way it is.
Douglas, you were the one that had mentioned at the start of the show that the chances of getting him back were diminishing with time. What was your basis for saying so?
Well, it's simply that our bargaining power is diminishing and their bargaining power is increasing over time. You want to get an American back, as Professor Hirschspring and I both agree, if you can. That's a very difficult thing to do against a group that's as ideologically and militarily opposed to us as the Taliban, you may not get very many chances. This may be the one and only chance. You never know for sure. But if you get a chance to get somebody back, you have a hard decision to make. Do you take it, even though you don't like the deal, five for one, five high-ranking guys, formerly high-ranking guys, I should say, for one? Or do you take your chances that maybe you'll have another opportunity sometime in the future to get him back, knowing that your leverage is declining while the other side's leverage is increasing? It's a tough decision to make, and I think we have to respect the decision of the administration, all parties involved in the administration's discussion, to make this deal. It's a deal that no American likes, but it may be the only deal that's on offer, and then you have to make a decision whether to take it. And from what I've seen, I would take it.
Let's take a call next from John in Oak Creek. Hi, John. John, are you there?
You talking about me or?
John in Oak Creek.
Oh.
Is that you? I can't tell if I'm talking to a guest or a caller.
No, I mean, it was me, but okay, I'm not the caller.
Okay. Well, John, maybe we can have our producer check in on you and get you back to the phone. Douglas, would you say that Obama broke the law here by not giving Congress a month's notice before executing the exchange?
From everything I've seen, he absolutely broke the law. If you, by the law, you mean the statute that requires 30 days notice.
Right.
But there is a longstanding proposition that presidents of both parties for decades have asserted, which is that when the president has to exert his powers as commander-in-chief of the military, he may use the Constitution to override a congressional statute on a matter like this. And in this case, when that statute was passed, Obama made what's called a signing statement, indicating in effect that he reserved his presidential powers to do what was needed. So I think legally he's got an argument that he had constitutional powers to override the statute. But that brings up the whole political question, the whole prudential question of whether he should have given more notice to Congress than he did, and indeed whether he should have given notice to Congress at all. I think it was, unless he had some information that's not available to those of us in the public, it seems to me it was politically unwise in the extreme not to give at least some advance notice to key members of Congress. The result of not doing so is that senior members of Congress in both parties are very angry at the president. Now, he may not have been able to give the 30 days notice because, as we just saw in the news reports this morning, this deal was only finalized apparently 24 hours before it was carried out. There may not have been 30 days notice. And if our government had taken the position, well, Taliban, you'll just have to wait 30 days, there's no guarantee that deal would have remained on the table for another 30 days. So I don't know that 30 days was practicable, but certainly he should have given some notice to key leaders in Congress, whatever notice he could, particularly when we've now learned that something like 90 officials in the executive branch were aware of this deal before it was executed.
And Dale, why do you take issue with the time frame that had been executed here?
Well, first of all, I agree with almost everything my colleague has said. I take issue with it because he signed it, and I mean, first of all, he's absolutely right. Commander-in-chief has certain authority beyond, above and beyond in a military action, but beyond what Congress can do. I take issue with it because it was just stupid. Because he's absolutely right. If he told them 2 weeks ahead of time, a week ahead of time, or even the night before, and gone and said, "Look, here's what the situation is." Instead, they were so scared that somebody would leak something that they went ahead and made a problem for them. I mean, this has happened over and over. It's happened in policy toward Egypt, our policy toward Libya, our policy toward Russia, our policy toward Syria, our policy toward Iran, our policy toward North Korea. Just one bumbling step after another. And you'd think, and then, as you pointed out, having Susan going out there and making her dumb comment, two for two, I just can't believe how inept the White House is when it comes to trying to deal with foreign policy.
Let's take a call next from Dave in Menominee. Hi, Dave.
Hi, thank you. Well, I think a lot of the bumbles are because the president knows that half of the Congress is there not to help. They're there to cause trouble, and they're there to undermine our president. I wanted to talk about the pure hypocrisy of the arguments being made here. Before Bergdahl was released, we had series of Republicans urging the president, do whatever you can. John McCain said, do anything possible to release this guy. Until he was released, then John McCain said, I didn't really mean anything. You know, there's lists and lists of tweets that were sent out after he was released praising how great it was. And then the Republicans deleted all their tweets. You know, it wouldn't matter if we released this guy with a deal or not. And can you imagine if the Republicans got a whiff of there was a deal and the president didn't take it? You know, it's a two-way thing. The Republicans are going to make this where no matter what, the president's going to lose. No matter what he does, we are going to argue against him no matter what.
Thanks, Dave. Dale, what's your response?
Well, welcome to the world of politics in Washington. I spent over 20 years in Washington, and I hate to tell you, this is the way it is with both parties. I've seen it over and over and over again. I was on the Hill, spent 2 years on the Hill, and I've seen the same game played by Democrats. I worked for one of the great power manipulators of all times, and saw him do it, and he was a Democrat. That's just the way politics are in Washington, and you know, it's worse now because I think the president has created an environment to make it worse. And because it's worse, we're now in a situation where there's one on one side and one on the other side, and there's a Berlin Wall between them. I don't know what's going to happen, but I mean, you know, when the president is saying, well, they won't do what I want them to do, so I'm just going to start signing orders from now on. And, well, go ahead, but then you're going to create the kind of situation the caller just described. I mean, so in a certain sense, it goes back to Obama. In a certain sense, it's normal politics in Washington.
And Douglas?
Well, I think Professor Hirschspring left out a rather key point, which the caller made, which is that the Republicans had been out to get Obama from the day he came into office. He didn't create this polarization. He tried to work with Congress at the beginning, and they shot him down on everything he attempted. But my much broader point is that obviously there are many people listening to the show who are fervent Republicans or fervent Democrats and who have differences of opinion on these broader issues of politics. The important question here, I think, is regardless of what party you're from, is bringing an American soldier home as a war begins to wind down the right thing to do? And if it's the right thing to do, are you willing to pay what could be a stiff price in order to do it? The administration made the call that that price was worth paying. I think it was worth paying, independently of the former behavior of Mr. Bergdahl, whatever it may have been. We'll find that out as time goes on. So I'd rather not see us have this whole discussion about Bergdahl degenerate into red versus blue politics. This should be a question for all Americans that we can try to look at, difficult as it may be, independently of politics.
Let me just say one thing. First of all, I agree with you. Second of all, I think what you have here is a clash of two. So we all took IR-1A, two different views, the realist and the idealist. And what I'm propounding is much more of a realist view. I'm told that that's passé and the 21st century, I don't think so. I think certainly the people that I spend my time working with, watching Obama try and take on Putin, which is a street fighter against a city organizer, it becomes very clear to me that what's happened is we have tried to engage the soft power, and every place we've tried to do it, we've lost. And right now we're leading from behind, which means that somebody else is in front, and we're just giving up the world to them. So, I mean, I think it depends on whether you're looking at the world from that of a Hobbesian realist, or if you're looking at that world from a much more international law, human rights sort of thing. And my only experience, both in the military and in the State Department, is that it's the biggest problem we have with foreign policy right now is we've slipped aside to the soft power, which has basically left us undefended. In fact, if Obama has his way, it's going to get the military will be even weaker than it is now.
Well, we'll have to leave it there. I want to thank you both for being with us today.
Well, thank you, and I want to thank my colleague for being so gracious and even-handed.
And I want to express my appreciation to my fellow colleague in the Council on Foreign Relations.
This is the friendliest...
A former Navy lieutenant, I certainly have to salute a former Navy captain.
Well, if you're going to the council meeting this weekend, I'll see you there.
I'd love to, but I'm traveling to Australia this weekend. But
all right. Well, thank you both, and thanks for having such a nice, constructive conversation about this. Douglas Castle is a Notre Dame Presidential Fellow and a professor of law at the University of Notre Dame. He has filed briefs in the United States Supreme Court on behalf of the rights of prisoners at Guantanamo Bay. And Dale Hirschspring is a distinguished professor of political science at Kansas State University and a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. He served in the U.S. Department's Foreign Service and the U.S. Navy. It's the big question. We're still opening the lines to you, wondering, with President Obama recently negotiating the release of Army Sergeant Bo Bergdahl in exchange for five Taliban prisoners from Guantanamo, we're wondering, was this swap the right thing for the U.S. to do? You can call in for our sound off at 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, and our email address is talk@WPR.org. Don't forget to vote online at WPR.org/joy. I'm Cynthia Schuster in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's the big question. I'm Cynthia Schuster in for Joy Cardine, and we're asking, with President Obama recently negotiating the release of Army Sergeant Bo Bergdahl in exchange for five Taliban commanders from Guantanamo, was the swap the right thing for the United States to do? That's our big question at WPR.org/joy, and you can also call in with your thoughts at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. You'll get 30 seconds to sound off on the question. We'll start with Mary in Milwaukee. Hi, Mary.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I'm actually pretty proud that the president made his decision to house these prisoners for the rest of their life. Astronomical. A free prisoner, leave no man behind. A good call, President. Good job. That's all I have to say.
Thanks, Mary. Jeff in Green Bay is next. Hi, Jeff.
Hi. Only time will tell if these five guys go back to where they came from and crawl in a hole and they're never heard from again. It'll be a good deal. I highly doubt that that's the case. I think that time will prove with more lost American lives that this was a horrific idea.
Thanks, Jeff, for your call. Joseph in Wausau, your turn.
Yeah, hi. I think... time will tell, like the gentleman said. Maybe a drone will get all five of those guys a month from now. You never know. But, you know, President Obama's darn if he does, darn if he doesn't. He can't win. You know, the Republicans are the biggest Monday morning quarterbacks I've ever seen in my life. They've just had a level of disdain for this president that I think is personal. And no matter what he does, they're going to spin it that it was the wrong decision. And, you know, that's my comment. I think, you know, unless, you know, look at the arms for...
Yep. Sorry, there's your 30 seconds, Joseph. Thanks for your call. And thanks to all who've sounded off on the sound off. This is the big question on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I want to thank Bill Martins for producing the hour, Christy Taylor for on-air production, and Robin Cherry as well. I'm Cynthia Schuster in for Joy Cardine. This is Wisconsin Public Radio.